I'm Kate Northrup.
And I'm Mike Watts. And we're partners in life, love, and business.
Welcome to the Kate and Mike Show, where we share insights and interviews on entrepreneurship, relationships, parenting, self-actualization, and making a life, not just a living. Hey, welcome to the Kate and Mike Show. This is Kate.
And this is Mike.
And today we have our friends Alexandra Jameson and Bob Gower on the podcast talking about their brand new, super, super practical that we are so excited to use book lit called Getting to Hell Yes. So Alexandra Jameson is a success mentor, life and health coach to creative professional women who want it all. She is the best-selling author of Women, Food, and Desire, co-creator and co-star of the Oscar-nominated documentary Super Size Me, and highly sought-after wellness expert. And I love Alex. And Bob.
Bob helps organizations move faster, create better products, and become happier, more engaging places to work. He is an authority on agile software development, lean theory, and responsive organizational design, and has advised leaders at numerous companies, including GE, Ford, Chanel, P, Procter & Gamble, and Spotify, in creating more effective organizations. He's also an author of Agile Business, A Leader's Guide to Harnessing Complexity, and speaks regularly on organizational development and leadership. I should read his book. I'd be really
interested. Totally.
We have a very similar background.
Yes, you do. And Bob threw out a couple of really great book recommendations in this episode, in addition to, of course, their own book, Getting to Hell Yes, which is this conversation we're having today is about a framework that Bob and Alex, who are a married couple, created together called ICBD. And it's a framework for having difficult or high stakes conversations. And I can literally think of 3 million applications of this. And we've already used it in our own life since this episode. And I can just see how healing this conversation can be. So the framework is sharing your intentions, concerns, boundaries, and dreams or desires. And in this episode, you're going to hear how that can play out with your children, in marriage, in community work, in your business, with customers, in sales conversations, and more.
I don't have anything else to add on that. It was a great conversation. And we actually not only used it in our own life, but we used it with our friend who is navigating a potential job offer. So I sent her the book and I was like, do this. I was like, this is perfectly timed for what you're doing and to go through that. So she's working through that right now. And it was really good. And reading,
this was a really good episode.
it's one thing to read a book, but then it's also to hear how you can apply this in your day-to-day life. And so I feel like that's what this podcast is about. It starts off with, you know, the theory behind all of this, and then we get into some practical applications. And I feel like that is really important for this. I'm going to use this a lot. I'm going to use this to make decisions of projects that I want to roll out, working with clients, working with everything, how we build our business. This framework is really important, and it's easy. It's simple. By the end of the interview, I was able to memorize the whole thing, what we're supposed to do. So it was very helpful. So
enjoy the episode.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, Bob and Alex.
Hi. How are you two?
We're good. Thanks for being here.
So happy.
It's so fun to hear from you. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Thanks for reaching out.
All the time.
Yeah.
Well, Instagram. Right. But in real life.
Last time we spoke was Woodstock in the winter, like 4 years ago. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. That was the last time I saw you, Bob. I've seen Alex in between at a wedding shower.
You got to, wedding. Yeah. I stay at home. So.
Yeah. Is this for you two, is this book, Getting to Hell Yes, is this the first project business-wise that you guys have collaborated on?
Yes. And let me tell you, we did the four-part conversation about whether or not to write a book together as a married couple.
Okay, so let's dive into that.
Yeah.
So I was reading Getting to Hell Yes. I love how practical it is. I'm excited to practice ICBD, the four-part conversation.
ICBD.
I'm saying it correctly.
Yes.
Okay. With Mike and also our team. I can think of a lot of scenarios in my life that this could go down. But what I'm craving to talk about today, if it's okay with you guys, is more like concrete examples of how this has gone down in your life and then also the lives of people you work with. And then I may or may not come up with some scenarios that I have in mind.
Just off the top of your head, you might have something.
First of all,
we should define.
I will say, I think that having Bex, so our mutual friend, Rebecca Baruki, her foreword was so effective to set up the book as like, oh my God, I can't wait to read this. This is going to change my life.
It made me cry when I read that intro that she wrote. It was incredible. Yeah.
She was probably the first friend outside of a workshop setting that I shared it with. And, you know, Bex, she took it, she ran with it. And she said within a couple of weeks, she got back to me, I think this just saved my marriage. And, you know, she's got 5 kids. And she's like, I'm using it with my husband. It turned something around for us. I'm using it with my kids. She's making her teenagers read it now, which is so amazing. So, yeah, we were blown away.
Yeah, and it really, first of all, I love Bex. I love you guys. So I loved knowing that this is helping her. And also, just from a marketing perspective, I was like, wow. When the foreword is that good, it really sets up the book for like, oh, I need to read this. I need to incorporate this into my life. I don't even know what it is yet, but I'm in. I mean, I had bought in from that foreword. So that was cool.
And that really speaks to, I think, something that emerged from this process for us, which was, you know, like we know a lot of people who are really good marketers with big lists. And, you know, it's actually somewhat common, I guess, in the world for people to almost like either brag about the size of their list or ask, you know, like there's a little bit of that. And it's always made me feel kind of icky and bad. And then I think as we started thinking about who should write the foreword, like who should write, you know, we were like, well, we know this may be big name. Maybe we could get them. And they realized, no, it needs to be somebody for whom it is transformative. You know, somebody who really felt it, because that's what this thing is about. And that's actually, I think, probably a good marketing decision. Not to mention Bex does have a nice list as well. But
she knows.
It was because she was moved and she moved us.
Yeah.
It was a good story.
Yeah.
I love going to the list party conversation. So fun. Yeah. How big is your list? My list is bigger. Oh, yeah.
Let's get a ruler out right now.
Yeah, let's do it.
What we're talking about here.
For those listening, if you did not catch Bex on our podcast, we had her on last year on You Have 4 Minutes to Change Your Life, her book on meditation and anxiety. So check that out. Okay, so tell us, if you could go over what the acronym is and then tell us how that conversation went down for you two about should we even write this book as our first concrete example.
Right. You do acronym. I'll do the second part.
Sure. The acronym is intentions, concerns, boundaries, and dreams. Sometimes we say desires. And sometimes for intentions, I have to kind of put a finer point on it and say, this is your why or your purpose for doing this thing. And so we want to separate that from your wildest dreams about what might happen. Really just the intention is what gets you through the door. Like, why would I choose to do this at all? And that's usually connected to values, things that you value.
Yeah. Shoot, what was the follow-up question?
The follow-up question was, I know it's tricky. This is tricky.
So, I have my own show. I know how to do this. I don't know.
But you know what? I will say this. The energy of doing an interview with Mike is incredibly different than me alone. And then when you add Bob and you add you, suddenly we have 4 energies here as opposed to 2. It's a very different conversation.
I think this is we've done a lot of interviews on people's shows as a couple, but it's always one interviewer. So this is our first time actually. Yeah, you're right. It adds organizational communication complexity.
It does. The only other couple we've had on were Peter and Brianna Borton. So you guys are only correct. Our second twofer. Mm-hmm. So thanks for being here.
We can do this.
We can all do this. I believe in us. Okay. So Alex, if you could tell us about the whatever specifics you care to share about how it went down with the ICBD conversation about should we even write a book together as a married couple?
Right. Okay. So little inside story here. Bob, you have as well, but I have had a previous relationship that was also a creative partnership that went horribly, horribly wrong. And I ended up, I mean, it was really years of kind of therapy around it. I really ended up feeling unappreciated, taken advantage of, cut out, cheated, like a lot of really, really negative feelings.
Never even got a formal credit for it.
Yeah, didn't get formal credit for it. I actually got like a legal letter from a lawyer saying you cannot call yourself co-producer of this project. Yeah, it's just really shitty. So when we started talking about this, was like, I just to let you know, my lizard brain, my amygdala is freaking out right now that this is going to be horrible. I don't even want to do it because I'm afraid it will ruin our relationship while we write it. And then afterwards, you know, will I be taken advantage of again? Or will you feel like I didn't pull my way? You know, just so many fears, so many fears. So we decided to get so meta, use ICBD about writing ICBD. And by the way, it's a conversation that we're now in kind of all the time. We do kind of formally set aside time to go through the process about specific projects or vacations or, you know, like seventh grade is starting, that kind of thing. But we're kind of always in the conversation now. And through that process of listing my concerns and my fears and my worries, even the ones that my brain is telling me, okay, that's like crazy. Don't say that out loud. That's nuts. He's going to hold it against you. It really smoothed things over so beautifully. And we were able to see, hey, the relationship's going to win, right? Let's do this. But if it becomes a problem, if we don't work together creatively very well, that was another worry. Like, what if we suck at being co-writers? What if it's just not fun? Then Bob was like, then we don't write the book. The marriage is the important thing.
What was it? So how did you guys structure this? Did you write a chapter? Bob writes a chapter, Alex writes a chapter, so on. Did you sit down and like word for word start writing it together? What was your process?
All of that, I think. And it took us a long time because actually the book started off really as a Google document because we would get questions from time to time, you know, people we had taught the process to calling us up and saying, what was that process again? And then I'd have an hour long phone conversation with them, which was delightful, but time consuming. And so we thought, let's just give them something. And then we started thinking, you know, I think we're both, you know, like,
we're a little slow on the update.
It's a little slow on the update. We're like, wait a minute, people keep asking us for this thing. And we're looking for products to, you know, things to produce.
Sure.
We should produce the thing that people are asking us for and make it a real thing.
Wow.
That happened. Yeah, so I mean, I think we wrote the entire first draft almost in a weekend. It was like a bored summer weekend. It was completely, didn't even know it was coming. It was just like Saturday morning. We didn't have any plans. And I was just like, I'm going to write this thing. And we just started, and then I spit it over to you. And we kind of went back and forth. That was iteration one. And iteration two, when we decided to make it a product. And I read Ryan Holiday's book, The Perennial Seller. I don't know if you picked it up or if you know it. It's actually weirdly not his best-selling book. At all.
Ironic.
Ironic. But Perennial Seller means it sells for a long time, not it sells a lot.
Right.
Right. So maybe it is his best book. I don't know. I actually got a lot out. I love Ryan's work, but I got a lot out of that particular book. And basically he has this whole thing where you talk about the production of it with the, you know, with the customer in mind, and then the positioning of it, you know, like where you want to position it, and then the promotion of it. And that's the three parts. And as I was going through the production, I was like, well, we haven't really thought super carefully about who this is for, what we want them to be able to do after, and all of those things. And so there I went to a Trello board. Or we went to a Trello board and then kind of broke it all down. And then the book became about half as long because we're like, it just needs to do this. It became a tool that does X rather than a pontification about something that included a tool, which is kind of where it started.
And that was a really wonderful moment for me. This is my fifth book, and the first four were all with traditional publishers. And I had this other lurking, hidden concern that I didn't know was there until we got to this point. And I realized I do not want to blow this up into some bloated 340-page thing. It does not need to be. This is a tool that needs, you know, an hour, maybe an hour and a half to be read.
And yeah. This is self-published.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. I read it in 2 pumping sessions. Great.
It's not huge.
The new time measurement.
That's my time measurement. How many pumping sessions? How many ounces did I get while reading Getting to Hell Yes?
You can judge about how good the book is based off the amount of milk you get.
No, that has nothing to do with the time of the day. But
classical music to your belly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was really satisfying because on my Kindle, it was like, I'm here setting up, and oh wow, look, I'm 42% done. And then I got to the, read the tool, and I was done. And I was like, this is refreshing.
Satisfying, isn't it?
So satisfying.
So good.
I love checking off a book.
Yeah, I think this is my second book, and I think it's the first book that I've written that my friends have actually read.
What was your first book?
It was called Agile Business, and I wrote it. It was a collection of essays that I edited and produced with a former company that I worked with. So,
okay.
Organizational design. So it's a very, very niche kind of book. It's not surprising that friends didn't read it.
Well, one of the other things that we discovered, like, we had never done this exact kind of thing together before. So we discovered towards the end that we just had this Google Doc that we were working in together. We're like, you do that section, I'll do this section. And then we would read each other's stuff. And Bob was the first one to realize, you know what, we can just edit each other's stuff. We don't have to like laboriously go through the changes that we each made because we trust each other as writers. And we both know the content so well. It's like, make changes. If you see something that needs to change it. Like, you don't have to run it by me. Let's just do this thing.
And it helps that Google Docs is non-destructive editing. And you can add to any previous version at any time want to.
He's so techie. He knows all this stuff. I'm like, great.
Alex was so trusting, whereas Bob knew he could go back.
I was also probably the more heavy-handed editor, I think. I don't know. Did you experience that me that way?
Probably. I am such a quick start, like, let's get this thing done kind of person. And he's like, no. I mean, when he said Trello board, like, you started the Trello board. I'm like, oh, great. A tool I didn't know anything about. Cool.
Trello is a project management software, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Among other things. It's basically a list, and you can use a list for project management if you want to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice. Great. It's color coded. You would love it.
It's color coded.
I
know
it.
I love it.
You don't need to know this.
I manage my whole life with it. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Trello.
Trello.
Yeah, it's nice. It's easier than like, because we use Teamwork for our business stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just like Teamwork just can get messy. We use like 60% or 50% of what Teamwork actually has to offer. So, but yeah, Trello is just, it's a much more, it gets a little complicated the more people you can put into it, unless you have it set up correctly from the beginning. Exactly. Anyway.
Okay, so I have a question about ICBD.
Okay.
Many questions. One is, I, like many of us in this culture, focused on solutions and moving forward and action always. Mike will come to me talking about something. We have the opposite thing where, you know, oftentimes the woman will say to the man, like, I just wanted to say that I didn't want solutions. More often than not, it's Mike coming to me talking, and then I'm like, well, you could try this, and then, or maybe that, or whatever. And he's like, nope, just wanted to talk to you. And I'm like, oops, sorry. So I can see how this framework would prevent that, which is genius.
Yes.
But my little monkey mind was reading it thinking, but when does the part where the suggestions go? Like, when do you fix it?
Okay.
If at all.
Okay, perfect. So I actually just taught this to a client right before we started this recording.
Great.
And by the way, I've taught it to her a few times. Like, this is a new way of thinking about how to communicate with people. So don't kill yourself if you don't get it perfect on the first run through. Like, this is a new way to think about how to talk to somebody. And, you know, emotions come into play and it can get fuzzy. And so I was taking her through, okay, this is, you share your intentions and this is what intentions mean. And then you share your concerns, the big ones, the little ones, the crazy ones, just put them all out there. And then she's like, wait a minute, is this when we get to work on them? No, actually, we're not fixing anything right now. The whole point of it is to lay everything out. Bob, so brilliant. He said, this is like an emotional prenup, where you're figuring out the landmines before you get there, right? You're seeing where the challenges might be and if you're in alignment on everything. And you're going to find where there's points where you're not in alignment. And when you get through the whole conversation, then you'll be clear, like, oh, like, okay, now we know, like, there's this one thing that was back there that we need to talk more about. But this conversation is not where you fix everything. It's where you lay everything out.
Yeah. Actually, I really like this. Do you know Priya Parker, The Art of Gathering, is a book that just came out. We just saw her speak the other day. She's incredible.
No.
One of the things I love.
Priya Parker,
yeah. Okay. And one of the things I loved at the beginning of this little workshop-y thing we did with her was she's like, you can judge me, but judge me later. Like, don't judge me every step of the way because I designed this. I actually stole it yesterday because I was facilitating a bunch of engineers yesterday. And I was like, you're going to judge me, but just judge me at the end of the day rather than at the beginning of the day. And so I think that's sort of what we're asking people with ICPD is sort of like, absolutely judge, absolutely problem solve, absolutely, you know, like figure things out. But let's do it after we have complete information, after we have, you know, after we know what we're dealing with. Because often what happens, one, is like if I speak a concern, is that concern just sounds stupid to me as soon as I say it? I'm like, oh, that's never going to happen. Or if it does happen, it's easy to mitigate. It's easy to deal with. But then when we also have to, I think, allow ourselves to, if it's something really important, to allow ourselves to discover that we're actually not aligned. And this would be a really bad idea, you know, to do together. You know, like if we're going on vacation and I'm like, I want to run an Ironman, which I would never say, but I love that look on her face. Someone was just talking about Tough Mudder to me the other day and I got excited about that.
You have fun with that.
Okay.
The idea of a vacation, sitting with a book for 5 days.
Actually, more likely than not. Like, so let's say one of us said, I want to go to an all-inclusive resort in Mexico and just drink all the time. And the other one, you know, which again, neither of us, that would be a sort of a non-starter for both of us, that kind of vacation. But if that's what you really want out of a vacation, then maybe we should have separate vacations. You know, maybe we should try something, which we do actually from time to time, things separately.
So we like to say, like, in this space, you can ask questions, clarifying questions. If you're not sure or you need more information, you can ask those questions. But this is not a place to attack or argue points.
Mm-hmm.
Just information gathering. And again, that's very different from how I used to do things because I'm like, what's the tool? How do we move forward? Let's start going. And often then you run into a bunch of problems.
If you jump into the details too quickly, you lose sight of the overarching purpose or the intent or, and I think what we really want is just, we want people to feel like they're for each other at the end of the conversation. Like, I've got your back. Like, I understand, I know where you're coming from. And, you know, sort of the example we use in the beginning of the book where we talk about, you know, our neighbor smoking beneath our window.
Yeah.
And sort of like when we thought it was the first floor neighbors who we don't know, we were like, I'm not going to swear on your podcast, but you know.
You can swear.
Okay, so fuck those guys. You know, like there's more fuel for another letter to the landlord about those jerks. And then when we found out it was our second floor neighbor who our kids play together and we love him and we know him and we barbecue together, we're like, oh, that's fine. You know, and it was all because we have empathy for one person and no empathy for the other. You know, like all, my friend Kevin pointed this out to me yesterday. He's like, it's kind of like what, you know, Pema Chodron talks about. It's like, you bring something to the interaction and it's all about what you bring to the interaction. And so when I bring more empathy, more understanding, more knowledge to an interaction, what, you know, Chris Voss talks about tactical empathy, right? When I bring empathy to the conversation, problems have a way, we don't need to workshop them so much. They have a way of sort of evaporating or solutions have a way of sort of naturally appearing. That's our intent. Not that you can't add a problem solving thing on after this, sure, go for it. But that's not what the intent of this is.
That's great, I love that.
So. Can we do, I think for the listeners at this point, it's helpful to like walk through an exercise. We've done a lot of theory and behind the scenes.
Do we have an issue we'd like to discuss?
Probably.
So we could practice.
Yeah. Or I don't know if you guys have, because you do workshops on this. So do you have an example you want to share with people or we could talk about?
Like in starting school, I think that will speak to their audience pretty well.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And also we did a live event this week where we had a couple on stage who were talking about a potential business partnership that I thought that we could walk through as well. But
great.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. So do you have something you would like to talk about?
Not really. Otherwise I would have suggested it.
Okay. Well, let's start with our kid example first and then we'll probably have time to do another one if we want. So seventh grade just started and you know, our kid, my son, Bob's stepson, you know, seventh grade's a big year. So yes. First,
it's very scary for us.
It's very scary. mainly because our old trauma is coming back up. So first we set the scene, and that's a really important part of any conversation, is you don't want to approach any conversation by saying, we need to talk. Nothing good has ever come after that phrase. Right. So we decided to go out to brunch, beautiful place. Let's all be fed in a nice setting. And then we brought it up. And he's been through this quite a few times, our son has. So he's a little bit used to it, but not like a master of it. He doesn't exactly know
that. Yeah, we don't really tell him we're doing the process. We do the process, which is the other great, I mean, I do this as a sales process all the time without the other person knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really great.
Right.
And also I think with Lakin too, like there was a little bit of, he, you know, when we're saying, why do you want to go to seventh grade? And he's like, I don't, you know, and you're like, well, you're going.
Right. So. Well, we talk about intentions with him. We started off with intentions. He's like, well, do I have to? No, well, okay, maybe not. But what do you want to get out of this year? Let's frame it that way. Where my intention was, you know, I want you to have a year where you feel like you've learned a lot, where you like your friends, where you enjoy your school and feel supported.
Hmm. It's just true. Actually, I'm just realizing too, like my intention for Lakin, now that I've thought about it more, is that seventh grade and eighth grade are the years that you grow up. It's like the transitional, it's from, you know, child to pre-adult, let's say, you know, and which is a big shift, and sort of helping him to do that, you know, in the beginnings of differentiation, the beginning of separation, like to kind of help him do that in as painless a way as possible, recognizing that pain is an inevitable part of that process probably as well.
This is very heady. I think this is the super adult version of
Yeah, well, I'm just realizing like I have all this attention, you know, intention for him, you know, like, and I think this is a powerful thing is as you go through the process, actually, Mike, it sounds like I'm a verbal processor and maybe you are as well. Like I just want to talk. Like, I just want to talk things out. I can't decide until I'm actually by myself and quiet. But I have to like get the information for that. This process is actually great for people like me anyway. So I'm like, I have all these intentions that I hadn't really surfaced before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until you're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we all talked about our concerns. And what were Lakin's concerns? I can't remember. Oh, except he has like a nemesis every year. So mm-hmm. that it revolved around that kid.
It changes. Sometimes the nemesis becomes the best friend the next year.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But, yeah. He was worried about, oh, there's going to be homework every day this year. And we have to take tests. You know, and he was just like listing out all this stuff. And it's just a space, right? He knows now that we're not going to like try to make him feel a different way. He just gets a chance to talk.
So good.
And mm-hmm. then, oh yeah, so yeah. nice.
Yeah.
And then our concerns were, I was like, I'm worried that you'll feel overwhelmed or that the schedule will get so crazy and you won't feel like you can talk to us or find us when you need us. And, you know, so we just laid out all of our concerns.
Yeah. And I remember being concerned that I was concerned about the homework too, because we have a pretty chill household, you know, like we're not always running places or doing things. We actually moved close to his school, what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So he could walk and, you know, first it was us walking him and now it's him walking himself. And like, I love our chill mornings together. I don't want to be rushing to finish homework. I don't want anybody to be. I think, you know, us having our little musical dance party in the morning is fun. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't want, I, you know, like, I want to have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're such a great stepdad.
Or a terrible academic role model.
Wow. Well, okay, so
fuck the homework.
So it's interesting because earlier this summer, Lakin had a bit of a meltdown. Like, you know, really, really, he really laid it out for me. You know, tears and crying, like, what if I don't do well? What if I have to be held back? What if I don't do good on my tests? You and Dad are going to be so disappointed in me. Like, right? Because he knows that he has that space because we've done this conversation so many times.
Yeah, I mean, the added sort of complexity in New York City is that his school doesn't go through high school. So it means next year is high school exam year, you know, like it's an intense process here. And, you know, he certainly picked up on the tension from teachers and from us and from everybody about that. So not only is the hormonal stuff and the social stuff happening, but he's being judged. You know, his value is being judged.
How old are you in seventh grade? How old is he?
13, 14.
He'll be 12 in December.
12, 13?
But yeah. In New York City, you have to apply to high school, even if it's public high school. So you have to go through, it's like the most stressful process. It's worse than applying to colleges. You got to go all over the city, visit schools, apply to each one, and it's bazonkers.
Yeah.
So that actually, when we got to boundaries, I said, look, I know that, you know, finding the right school for you is important to me, but I refuse for us to go insane in the process.
Awesome.
So this year is about helping you develop and learn and enjoy. Yeah. I will not let us get dragged down that crazy spiral. That's a boundary for me. And we're going to have a tutor. You know, we're going to put safeguards in place, and we're going to do certain things to help. And here's our, let's talk about screen time rules, right? That's a boundary as well. And boundaries are also things that you do want, not just don't want. Like, all right, we're going to have 2 hours of screen time a day on the weekends. During the week, there's like, okay, we'll watch something together before bed on TV. But there's like, you know, you're not coming home, and we're not arguing about whether or not you get to play video games. That's just not how we roll. Like, it is home, work, and hang time. That's it.
Molly's just like a master boundary maker and keeper.
That's awesome.
You do it with such love. You do it with such, like, it's just sort of, and without any question, without any equivocation. Like, this is happening, or this is not happening. And you can feel however you want to about it. And I would really prefer you feeling happy about it. I'm happy either way.
That's amazing.
Bob is expressing his intention for your boundary rules at this
That's
moment.
That's amazing. I love hearing that. It's just, I don't know that I very often, I mean, this is a generalization, but it is true. I don't hear about that many women who would say, or somebody would say about them, she is a master of boundaries. So I just want to really celebrate that, Alex.
Really?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Two things about that.
Oh.
I was raised by a high school principal.
Uh-huh.
My father was a high school principal for 25 years. And he was just, it was just so clear. Like, these are the expectations and the rules. And there's, you know, there's freedom in life. But these are the rules, and you know what they are, and there are repercussions for crossing those boundaries. So it was just always super clear. I also noticed something that I do differently than other parents I know, which is parents will ask their kid, like, this is what we're doing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at the end, like, you're asking your kid to agree with you about something they obviously are going to say no to.
You know, that's a really good point. We actually learned that from we took a parenting class with our pediatrician who has a PhD in some sort of kid psychology something. And she told us that, but I forgot. So thank you.
I don't need to ask
especially with a 3-year-old.
I don't need to ask Penelope's permission to pick her up and take her to the grocery store. No. Like, you're just coming with you.
Okay, we're going to go home for a nap, okay? No, don't ask her that question. No, we're going home for a nap, period.
She's going to say, no, this is not okay.
Well, I watched something. I think that probably the most skillful application of this was the other day when we were sitting around the kitchen table, and it was a Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, it's Saturday, it's a hot Saturday and we're kind of stuck inside a little bit. And so we're sitting inside and we're having lunch, and he now has a lizard. We have a lizard in our house now, and feeding the lizard requires mealworms. So we have to have, not only do we have to like handle live worms, but we have to source them as well. And you have,
oh dear.
And so Alex was faced with having to go like the next day to Union Square to get mealworms. And she's like, I don't want to do that. Like, that's like an hour out of my day for your lizard.
Two hours.
And so, and Lakin, he's never been on the subway by himself before. And within the space of about 5 minutes, she had clearly decided that this was happening this afternoon. And there was no way that he could not, that he'd get around that. It was happening. He was going, and he was going to be happy about it. And not only that, it was an adventure and a duty. And so,
yeah. Like, Mom has decided that you are taking the train by yourself. Here's the money. Here's my Metro card. and you totally know how to do this. Like, it's fine.
You got this. And so that's like the other thing about, that's the other gift of boundaries. It's like, you got, you know, like, I trust you to be able to respect this and be able to handle this. Yeah. Actually, that's my experience of us in our relationship too. Like, I, you know, this is not my, I have been in many other relationships and some quite bad ones. Actually, I had some very bad habits. And early on, I was like, oh, my, those bad habits I have must disappear or mm-hmm. she will. You know, and I was like, and she never had to say anything. It was just really obvious.
So, yeah, I agree.
Huge segue, but that was, but it really taught me how
to
like.
Enough about Alex and her amazing boundaries.
I love this conversation.
So on.
You have amazing
boundaries. It taught me how to love you. It taught me how to be, you know, and that's the thing. I think if we're talking about boundaries, I think it was from Alex that I learned this, that letting someone know your boundaries in advance is a gift.
Yes.
It's a gift to you. It's a gift to them because, man, does it suck to cross someone's boundary, you know?
Yeah, everyone feels bad.
Everyone feels bad.
Well, especially when you didn't know there was a boundary.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, it sucks if you knew there was a boundary and then you crossed it anyway. That's kind of one version. But when you didn't know and then they're so mad, it's really awful.
It is.
Because that is that, you're right. It is such a gift to let people know our boundaries.
Yeah. I mean, your next book could be researching like couples that have healthy relationships, and I guarantee there's great boundaries in there.
Yeah, for sure.
That probably started with the woman. I bet you. Like,
somebody got mad.
Yeah, it was because in our relationship, if you think back to the beginning, like there was boundaries.
You're right.
You created it.
Actually, this is a funny boundary story.
Because the cocky funny, the David D'Angelo cocky funny.
I got a call. Like, this is relevant because our mutual friend Laura Garnett is who introduced you two, which is, you know, and now you're married, which is so amazing. She's also who introduced me and Alex. And it was at Laura's birthday party. Remember at that little restaurant in New York? And I think you were there too, Bob.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. You guys were just dating, I think. Anyway.
That was the day we got married, maybe, because we went to her birthday party at ABC.
Oh,
no, it was earlier.
It was before.
So many Laura Garnett birthdays. So.
There are, which I love. I'm sure Laura will be on the podcast at some point.
We learned about the knots.
We learned about the knots.
Yeah.
So I got a call. I got an email from Laura I think it was Laura, saying, Nicole Daydone wants to do a coaching call for you. And I was like, okay, that's so weird. She wrote the book Slow Sex and she's the founder of One Taste. I really had no idea how she knew who I was. But I was like, great, I'll take it. And so I got on the call and it was a week before Mike and I were supposed to leave on our road trip.
In 2011.
And she was like, what's going on? She was telling her about, this is sort of maybe an ICBD conversation. I was telling her about this road trip. I was about to leave to go on the road with a man I barely knew. And I had these, you know, concerns, obviously. And one of them is that he was like so sarcastic, but also really loving. But the sarcasm was really biting and it hurt my feelings. And she challenged me to call him up and have a boundary discussion where I said, okay, we're going to go on this trip. And I need you to know these are the following behaviors that are not acceptable to me. And I did that.
You did.
And here we are.
Yeah, I learned the techniques from studying David D'Angelo's cocky funny about attracting women to you, but I guess I never got to the point about what to do when you have the woman.
Right, like keeping one around.
Stop, right?
You got to change your tactic. And so, it was like, you have to cut that shit out, and we're going to be doing this.
And it is good information for those of you listening that might need to find a person in your life that you want to and hasn't been successful, but it is.
Was the cocky funny attractive initially, or was it always a bit of a problem?
It was. Okay. I'll tell you what, it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was like, it was like, I will say I was confused.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and I met in June 2010, and he proceeded to follow up with me regularly until January 2011, when we'd only seen each other three times in between, but he would like email and Skype me and write these comments on my blog and call. And the whole time I was like, is this guy interested in me or does he want to like network about marketing? I just wasn't sure. And literally until the first night of our road trip when he kissed me and I was like, but yeah, it definitely kept me on my toes and interested. But I think more what kept me interested was your heart. I think that we could say it was the cocky funny, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't.
So back to your conversation with Nicole about boundaries. So in Lakin is now, he's now been in seventh grade for what, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And just about a week ago, the nemesis reared its head again. And so there's this one kid in his class that is really teasing him. And the other boys are ganging up, and it's becoming a borderline bullying situation. And, you know, my inner mama bear immediately wants to go destroy whoever is attacking my child. But we had a really clear conversation, a couple of conversations with him about, like, you need to tell him your boundary. You need to tell him, I don't like this. I want you to stop. If you can't just be nice to me, don't talk to me. So these are your boundaries. And if it persists, tell me, we're going to the guidance counselor. Like, this is, but we have to have a boundary in place so that when it's broken or walked over, then we know what to do next.
And he's also blocked on Instagram too, a couple of the boys, right?
Yeah. He also is like, I don't want them commenting on my stuff. So he's like, he's starting to take steps and creating his own boundaries that way.
And that might inspire me actually to quit Facebook altogether. Like, I'm this close right now just to leaving Facebook.
I know. So
I understand.
5 years I've been this close.
I mean, I wish I
want to get invited to stuff. I want the invites anyway.
I know the invites. And then like the only reason I'm on Facebook is to interact with the people who are in our programs.
Yeah. Well, somebody actually just reached out to me today who would not have had my contact information otherwise, and maybe hire me to do something. I'm like, okay, well,
I'll
keep it. Okay, a point for Facebook.
Yeah.
So we have to, I mean, I wish that I had known how to and had the safe space to think about how I felt and what I wanted and what I didn't want when I was 11.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It would be seventh grade would have been very different if I had had the conversation with my parents that you had with him. What a gift.
And then, you know, we always end on a high note after we all talk about our boundaries. We get to dreams or desires. It depends on what context we're talking about, but you know, his dreams were, you know, very, very seventh grade boy. He was like, you know, I want to have fun and I want to take art classes. And, you know, I want everybody to like me this year. Yeah. I was like, great. I like it.
Yeah.
And then we shared our dreams for him. You know, again, really sharing your dreams is like, go big. Mm. Inspire yourself and each other. And I talked about my dreams for him, but also my dreams for us as a family. Mm-hmm. You know, I still want us to have fun and have downtime and, you know, go do silly things. And I want you to feel like you've come a long way this year. And I still want mommy to have mom time with her boy and me time by herself and all these things. And in that last space, you can really find the energy together that helps you move forward as a team. Mm. You know, that co-created energy is really powerful.
That's such a great example of how this works in a family. So I'm understanding this on a deeper level. And my question now, and maybe Bob, you can share an example, because I was reading the book thinking, okay, so how could we use this in our team,
right,
in our company? So we work with, I think maybe 10 people, but it's probably more like 6 who are the
core of the team.
I don't know how to say it. Yeah.
The core.
The ones who work full time, essentially. So what would be an example of how this might go down with multiple people, like maybe on a Zoom call?
Yeah.
For example.
So,
and what the topic could be.
Yeah, I facilitate this a lot. And so the most recent thing I did was with a leadership team at a nonprofit that I'm working with. And, you know, they've been around for a little while, but they're still quite small. So we kind of brought them together, plus a couple of board members. And really the topic was, why this? Why this nonprofit? Why do you want to be involved? You know, what brought you here? And what was really moving about that was that it's actually a team that's under a little bit of stress. They're not doing great. Actually, they're doing pretty good now, but they came in with some stress and they came in with some challenge. And so, you know, like and part of it was, frankly, the founder's behavior, who is, you know, founder syndrome being what it is often, right? He's telling everybody what to do and then disappearing and then coming back and then telling everybody, you know, and sort of like that kind of, you know, people are like, what do I do? Am I doing a good job? Am I not? And there's a little animosity among kind of coworkers that was generated from there. But it started off with him talking, telling a story about actually some relatively deep sort of childhood trauma that actually led him to this topic area that this nonprofit is based on. And I really don't want to name any yeah. potentially identifiable at all because it was so personal. But frankly, we were all in tears by the end of the conversation, by the end of that particular, just that one share. And it went on for quite a while. It was like a 15-minute share, which is really long for this, but it was so rich. And then other people came at it because it's a nonprofit as well. People are obviously very values aligned. They're attracted to it because of their values. And so people really got to talk about where the source of their values as well. And he really set a good tone. And then as we went around the room, we talked about our concerns, and concerns were really like they were in a battle team and they didn't have a clear focus because they had done a couple of different things and they were like, and they weren't, their last source of funding had dried up and a lot of stuff was happening. You know, there was a potential funder actually even in the room with us at the time. Actually, no, we kicked him out for this portion because we thought it was too personal. So we're like, we made him take a walk. But, you know, but part of it is like you want to be able to, and that's the set and setting, right? You want to set it up in a place where people feel safe to be somewhat vulnerable and even prime them to be like, look, actually, this also comes from Priya Parker. Transformation happens from heat. It happens from conflict. It happens, you know, like we don't transform when it's all, you know, hugs and bunnies and rainbows and things. It comes when we actually interact in a way and reconcile maybe opposing viewpoints and each of us bring some of our own, more of ourselves to the conversation. So we have to prime them with that. And then it helps to have a facilitator, by the way, too, kind of keeping time and keeping crosstalk to a minimum. So then the next bit was we talked about our concerns, and there were significant concerns in the room. Like one woman said, I think we're reinventing the patriarchy here and we don't want to be doing that. You know, like, and man, like when you're dealing with a founder, you know, like it was, whew, you know, like, people saying stuff that they had never said before. And then boundaries, I encourage people to really focus on what do you need to be a really good worker? Like, we want you to be the best you can be. So what kind of self-care is important to you? What kind of environment do you need to work in? What kind of support do you need? Maybe even what kind of decision rights do you need in this organization? Do you need signing authority on checks? You know, like, because you're not gonna be able to do a good job without that. So getting it all out, again, we don't have to ratify it all. We just have to get it all out. But really, really emphasizing the self-care. And then the last bit is, you know, dreams. Hey, if we're really successful, how does it feel to us? And man, does that conversation get exciting.
And even metrics, right?
And even metrics, right? You know, like we'll be on the front page of this. We'll be on the front page of that. We'll be on stage at this conference talking about this level of success. We'll have this number of followers or this number of, you know, satellite, you know, thing, you know, like our budget will look like this, you know, all of those things, like really, really getting specific.
And even for a project, you mentioned this or it came up recently that maybe one person on the team represents the customer or the project, mm-hmm. right? Like maybe if we did it again, maybe we would have somebody represent like, I am the book, mm-hmm. I am speaking for the book, or I'm speaking for your customer avatar.
Yeah.
Like that person plays that role as well.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We've also had friends use this kind of in a similar size business to yours that when they're bringing on a new person, like they'll hire a new person, even in the job interview, you know, like, why do you want to work here? What concerns you about working here? What do you need to, you know, like, and I just think about it, like one of the things that I'm really passionate about is work not being a shitty place for people to be, you know, frankly, like, and it is for so many people, right? Like we just sort of accept it. Oh, work is shitty, right? That's the way it should be. And I just don't think it has to be that way at all. I don't believe in zero sum games for the most part. I think we tend to invent them where they don't exist. Like work has to win or your self-care has to win. I think that's a false choice most of the time, at least in the long term, maybe in the near term, it's not, right? But you know, like kind of asking, I mean, I can imagine like a potential boss asking me like, how do you do your best work? Like where, you know, like, where are you? Like, what are you doing? Like, do you work well at home? Do you work well in an open environment?
Don't talk to me before 10 a.m.
Are you a verbal processor? Are you not? You know, how much vacation do you need a year? What other, and also even boundaries are like, what other commitments do you have? You know, like, do you have, you know, an autistic child at home that needs a lot of care? Do you have an elderly parent that needs a lot of care? Like really, and I mean, maybe you might run into some legal trouble. Like, I'm not sure what you can ask in interviews or not. but and maybe it's just sort of eliciting the response rather than asking, pointed, do you plan on having a child soon?
Certainly in onboarding, right? Like once you've decided to make the hire, then this could also be used in that conversation to say, okay, well, you're here.
Yeah.
So how can we, right, especially with that boundaries around what you need to do your best work.
And the client that I just taught this to today was bringing on a nanny.
Uh-huh.
She has three kids and her husband got a job in another city. And so they're in this, early stage together. So I coached her through how to have this conversation with the nanny so that they start the relationship knowing how to talk to each other.
Yeah.
This is great. Oh, wow.
I just realized my face was cut off in the...
Yeah, it's been the whole time.
It has been the whole time.
We started the video off, those of you are listening on podcast, but Bob said, is this on video? And he had to get his hair straight. In order for
he was kidding.
I know he was kidding, but then until right now, we have only seen Bob's nose and then half of his face for most of the time.
But you know what? Here's what's great. So great about that. I really appreciate that because that shows that Bob is like super present and not distracted by the fact that we're on video. The fact that he didn't even know we couldn't see half of his face is like
checking out myself the whole time. Yeah,
right. That's what I mean. It's such a testament to your presence. True. So thank you.
Then going back to the nonprofit, so. Kind of what was brought up earlier is about getting solutions or solving the problems that are the concerns that come, right? So, I mean, I would say with your son, it's a little bit different, but like with the nonprofit, it's like, so there are intentions, desires, concerns that are brought up, what's going on. And then how do you say for the woman that was like, well, this sounds like we're reinventing the patriarchy. And you can't be like, oh, great, that's awesome, later. It's just like, so how do you actually get to the point of creating these solutions?
Well, ICBD is not going to fix the patriarchy. Let me just...
Correct.
Actually,
it has a role to play.
It does.
Actually, it can. Yes, it can.
Yeah.
Because this conversation is all about fairness. When we talk about psychological safety in the book, I'm totally stealing what you were about to say, wasn't I? No. Okay. Psychological safety is when teams actually do work together better because there is equal time to speak, because it is a safe place with a structure for real conversations to be had. And that is definitely not the patriarchy.
Right. Yeah. Because it's decentralizing.
Right.
I also think, and this is something that I struggle with a lot because I work in organizational change. I'm often like either in the middle of a change program or I'm helping a leadership team sort of kick one off or define one. And often I'm actually trying to work with rather unhealthy leadership teams. It's really common for leadership teams to be unhealthy just because they don't share a lot of work. Whereas, like a product team in the company can be really healthy because they know what their mission is. Whereas the leadership team is all like, and a lot of them have often been like CEOs of their own companies and they come in with a certain level of ego and sort of like reconciling all of that can be really challenging. But what I find is that what the role of this process is not that it fixes things immediately. It doesn't be like, it's not like, oh, we did that process and now we should hug and go. And maybe we do. Actually, after this one, everybody did was hugging and it was really sweet. But that's already part of their culture anyway. It wasn't like an addition to the culture. But it's a little hippie kind of, they're hippies a little bit. But so am I. I'm married.
How are we?
Sorry. So are you. So, but what happened is that it is, I think there's a level of being able, I remember I mentioned heat before, being able to hold paradox, hold heat, hold conflict, hold, I think we actually have to like increase our ability. And actually one place that I'm thinking about this a lot, and I know I've seen your posts about race and kind of racial, I know you had Rachel Cargill on the show and all of this. And like, one of the things I'm realizing is like, part of what I need to do is increase my ability to hear stuff that I don't want to hear and be able just to hear it. And also stuff that I can't fix, because that's terrifying as well. Like stuff that I don't want to hear that I can't fix. Ooh. But being that, like being in that space is a transformative act. You may not have transformed it, but you've created the conditions from which transformation can emerge. And that's what I've experienced with this particular team. So one of the things we identified early on, and the leader, the founder identified as well, he's like, I'm not the person to lead this long-term. He's like, we got founder syndrome and I'm the root of it. I know this. But he also was such a sort of, he's a genius. I mean, I deeply respect his thinking and his work. And he's, highly opinionated, and his opinions are often right. Sort of like, well, how do we get him to play the appropriate role? And from this, we actually just got announced the other day that actually starting on Monday, they have a brand new executive director who is a powerhouse in, you know, like somebody who is deeply respected by everybody, who I believe strongly will unify. And I don't know that would have been possible. I don't know if he would have been able to hand it over. I don't, you know, without it sort of the heat generated from this particular conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't want to credit it with that necessarily, because I think, you know, there's a lot of other contributing factors, but I think we did lay the groundwork where, one, we also had him really feel, okay, this is a problem. If I want to be in line with my own values, I have to fix this.
I think you can take credit for it, because I've now witnessed or been a part of this conversation structure so many times that I've seen, like, just by talking through or hearing other people, you come to mm-hmm. the realizations of what is just true, needs to be done, is fair and equitable. Like, if you are for each other, you either get to hell yes, or, as we like to say, you get to hell no.
Yeah.
That is just as valuable. Like, oh, wait, this is not a good idea. We should not be doing this at all, or we need to totally rethink this. And then, okay, let's go rethink this. That's also a great result.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, that's what I see with this, just off the examples we've been used today. Because when we're training somebody, you know, I used to do this a lot with our network marketing business. It wasn't about me telling the person what to do. It was about me asking the correct questions, and they figured out their own solution. Right. And that's what exactly, like, that sentence right there kind of sums up this process after hearing the examples explained out, where it's like you're helping someone or a team or an organization or structure or a partnership identify what's going on, like hearing each role where everybody is, and eventually the solution will be determined based off how going through these four steps.
And
it's not that anything has to be solved at that moment, but it's like there's clarity saying, like, the patriarchy is a great example. It's like, well, we're not going to fix that this second.
Yeah.
But the founder could be like, oh, we got a major problem. Now I see what's going on. So what do I have to do to take myself out of the situation that allows the team to thrive?
And to get super hippie about it, this is a very masculine structure in which to have a very emotional feminine process. Like, there's simple four steps, and each one is, we're talking about this area and that's it. And then we move forward, very linear. But in each section, the heart and the soul and the organic can emerge. And so it feels very safe to people who are not used to being very vulnerable out loud.
And to get the opposite of hippie, which is, I don't know if you've read the book, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
No, but you're giving me, I'm writing all of these
books. I was like, throw out books. Anyway, but Voss, because I'm always, I get obsessed with a book and then I talk about it nonstop. But so Voss is, he was one of my favorite books of last year. He was the international hostage negotiator, lead international hostage negotiator for the FBI for many years. And like, he's a, you know, dyed in the wool law enforcement guy. And so he began to develop, he actually helped the FBI sort of develop their hostage negotiation practice. And one of the things he realized early on is that the emotions of the other person really matter. And also that he can't,
shocking,
right? And it was shocking. It was shocking to the negotiation world. We, you know, our book is, the name of our book is sort of a play on getting to yes, which is William Ury from the Harvard Negotiation Project. And so Voss went to the Harvard Negotiation Project. He got invited to go in, and he was very intimidated. And in the first several exercises, he basically kicked ass.
He smoked everybody,
including the professors. Like, he would just, and, you know, like the professors, like, they sprung a thing on him where they're like, we have your son, you know, and we're gonna kill him if we don't. And he had to negotiate immediately. And he basically boxed them into a corner very quickly because he was attuned to the emotions mm-hmm. math. But even any initiative to empathy. You don't have to like what the other person feels, but you have to know what the other person feels. You don't have to be aligned with their with their intentions, but you have to be aware of their intentions. And so, you know, like, and I mentioned I use this in sales all the time. It's really, I think, refreshing for people, because I sell consulting and change management programs a lot, sometimes some very big ticket items. And so people will come in and they'll expect me to say, this is why I'm great. And instead I come in and say, wait, why are you doing this? Yeah. And if we go wrong, where will we go wrong? What are your concerns? What's freaking you out right now? And what must happen, what must not happen? Because that helps me map their organization, right? Who has signing authority to what? Who's the boss that they have to please? And then their dreams, which no one ever asks them, right? Which is like, what if, you know, like, oh, well, I get a promotion. Okay, cool. My job is to help you get a promotion then. All right, I'm going to make my proposal is going to center around this guy who has signing authority getting a promotion at the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I think that's genius.
It's amazing. I just stumbled on it because I always thought I was a terrible salesperson. I never was interested in sales. I was like, well, I'll try this. And then it just kept working.
As you were speaking, I just wrote down a little note to myself to use, to practice this as a format for writing a sales page. Cause I don't do any one-on-one selling really, but I do a lot of written selling and I'm going to practice. I'll let you guys know.
I mean,
send that to, I would love to see how that turns out. That'd be
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I'm about to rewrite a sales page in the next month. So I'll use this as a framework and I'll report back.
I'm going to use this for everything.
So we do.
Thank you.
We do.
Yeah, we do.
Use it for everything. We're constantly in it. Bob likes to say it's like, you know, if you're learning to play guitar, you practice the scales and then you go play jazz eventually, right? We're just kind of going back and forth with it all the time. And it's a way to bring kind of a business-like logical structure to your personal relationships and bring more emotion and heart to your business relationships.
We were in a cab on the way to Astoria on Tuesday to give our first talk. We've never given a talk together. So it was not only our first project, it was our first talk. And I was like, so what are your intentions? And she like rolled her eyes. And then we had a great conversation.
And it
really set us up. We arrived aligned and we were like ready to roll. And it was like, I think it was a good talk.
It was
I haven't seen the video yet, but I thought it played well.
Now, where did this come from?
So this came from a workshop I was teaching several years ago, and it was a workshop for couples. If it's okay with you, I'm not going to go into great detail.
That's fine.
About what that was. This is some personal details about me, which people can figure out probably. But it was a workshop for couples, and couples were coming in with a lot of expectation. They were coming in and often conflicting expectation, and often years of angst and years of feeling like they weren't happy. They weren't, you know. And I thought I was teaching sort of a technical workshop, but I realized the problem was that it wasn't about the technique. It wasn't about technical stuff. It was really about the interpersonal interaction that was going on between the two people. And it all had to do with expectations. It all had to do with where they were set up. And so I was actually working, I was a marketing consultant at the time. I was doing some coaching, and one of the people I was coaching was a dating coach. And so she actually shared with me a sort of a, let's call it a proto version of this. I ended up modifying it quite a bit over time, but a proto version of this conversation. And I was like, oh, that sounds useful. Let me give that a try. And so I just kind of kept using it. And then Alex helped me teach the workshops a few times. And then that's where she learned it. And then we ended up refining it because as we talked about it, we're like, what is an intention really? What are we really talking about when we're talking about intention? At least the first few times I did it, I was probably just like, I almost took any answer. And then I got really more crisp about what is an intention, what is a concern, and then context by context, what boundaries are important. And I think it's only in the last year that I've really talked about self-care a lot in the business context with this. It used to be more about like budgetary boundaries and that kind of stuff. And I realized, no, that's not the issue. So this is sort of like an onion. It's sort of like peeled slowly. And then I think that was when we started realizing that people were calling us and asking us about it. And then it bled its way. And, you know, I think the first time we really used it personally, I have a little bit of a, you know, kind of a cantankerous relationship with my family, as I think many people do. It's not terrible. It's not wonderful, but it's just sort of like, I always don't like the way I show up when I go, especially when I'm taking a partner to see my family. And so it's finally, I think our third or fourth trip to see my family. I was like, I don't like the way this has gone. Let's see if we can make it go better. And we ended up with kind of great boundaries. Like we stay in a hotel, we don't stay, you know, and we take a walk, or we each get alone time while we're there. We don't have to do everything that my mother wants us to do.
We only stay two nights.
We stay two nights, you know? And frankly, I just had the best visit I have ever had with my family. I think hands down, and I'm 53 years old, and you know, and I've been visiting my family for a long time, so I left home at 18. This was hands down the best visit I've ever had.
Because your boundaries kept getting clearer and clearer over the last 3 or 4 years. And I mean, it was beautiful to see you come back.
And it was all about boundaries in a way. Like, cause I was on my own, you didn't come with me. And I was like, but I'm still going to stay in a hotel. And that felt really almost like violent, like based on my family history, but man, it made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Knowing that I could just retreat to the hotel and have my, cause I'm a little bit of an introvert.
And I really want to underscore this. Our boundaries and our concerns, it might be a seemingly small concern or boundary that you state that could change everything. And we so discount what we want or what we worry about or what feels bad or what even we feels good to us, that we never even give it voice. And so we just steamroller over everything that's true about us in order to try to mind read or be something for other people. And I gotta say, I credit this process with this being a great relationship. I know we've been together 7 years now, and this is hands down the best marriage I've ever had.
Me too.
He's had more of them than
I had more marriages than she has.
Amazing. Well, I am so excited about this process. Cool. I'm so excited that you two are doing this work together, because it's so cool how it came so organically, you know, as opposed to, not that there's anything wrong with this, but sometimes it's like, oh, we want to do a business. What should we sell? Right? As opposed to, wow, this is organically emerging. People want it. I guess, okay, well, let's give it to them. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
We were actually very clear to stay out of each other's businesses in the first few years of our relationship.
I can see why.
Yeah.
Based on your past. Although, having run a business with my husband now for 5 years, I'm a big fan, but it only works when you've got some frameworks like this going on. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to add that.
We always say, like, check the title of the next book, maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
This is like a notion. This is like the beginnings of a notion. But is behind every great couple is each other.
No. That's a great title.
Don't steal.
URL.
Yeah, go buy the URL.
But yeah, this idea that we're really, that I feel like unequivocally that when I'm given the opportunity, it's my job to show up as for Alex, you know, mm-hmm. like as 100%. You know, it's not 50-50, it's 100-100, right? Right. And that I feel really like she's got my back in all things. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things to do is when she says, hey, should we? And I just say yes before she asks what it is, you know? It always delights her.
I love it.
I love that too. I'm delighted and I'm not even there. Okay.
That's awesome.
So this was great. I'm so inspired. Where should people get this book?
They should go to gettingtohellyes.com.
Great.
You can download it for free. You can get the PDF there for free. You don't even have to give us your email address. Like, we really just wanted to get this out into the world.
How generous.
You can put your email in and we'll send you a video of us and a cheat sheet and the blah, blah, blah. But if you just want it and you don't even want to have to hear from us ever again, you can just go to gettingtohellyes.com and you can get it for 99 cents as a Kindle.
Okay. You could do that too.
Yeah.
And
you can buy a physical copy?
Printed.
Yes, it's over there. Yes. It's very cute little booklet. Fits in your pocket. $6.99 on Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. You can get it for free, gettingtohellyes.com or Kindle or printed via Amazon for
all
just a little bit.
All the information is there on getting to hellyes.com.
Amazing.
It'll direct you to everything.
Do you have links to like your personal sites as well on there?
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, great.
If you want to find out about us, yeah.
And we're encouraging people to use it and get back to us. Like, we want to know how it's working for people. We've already had one woman used it in some kind of sales conference thing. She wrote back. She was like, oh my gosh, this was great. We used it already. And this was really helpful. I'm like, please tell us how it's going. We want to hear if you guys end up using it. Let us know.
But we're going to use it.
I already am.
It's happening.
It's happening right now.
Well, you can use it by yourself too, right? You can like use it to get.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's like, even if you don't use this in your work environments, whatever, but just me, like, cause I went to school for engineering. So this and organizational leadership and supervision. So this process is already like do. It's very easy for me to figure out. And it's a great way. Cause I could write down on a piece of paper if I'm going to launch something or I want to write a blog post. Or a great idea at this moment is like responding to people's Facebook comments,
yeah.
Right? Like I've had some crazy people comment on stuff on my website and I write up these posts that's very emotional. Like, and you see it, it's just like this dialogue of attacks towards each other. And I finally, one day I was just like, I have a podcast. I'm inviting you to come on it to have these discussions and let's actually really talk about these situations. And of course, people don't respond to say, yes, they'll do it. They're just done. And I was like, okay, that's over. Next. You know, but it's even like responding there, writing blog posts, like just list this out and be like, what are my intentions for this? What are my concerns about this post? Oh, my mom might think I'm negative thing. And it's like, okay, well, that's not valid, right? It's like, and you just start listing this out for individual projects you're doing. And I feel like, yeah, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
I've used it for exactly the same reason, by the way, like Facebook arguments.
Yes. I love Facebook arguments.
I love them. To stop them and was like, oh, yeah.
So funny. Well, thank you, you guys. This was such a great conversation.
Thank you for having us. Really. We really appreciate it.
Good work.
Good work. So exciting. Yay. Thank you. Bye.
Ever feel like you're constantly doing things but aren't able to carve out the time or energy for the things that really matter to you? Mike and I want to share our top 5 tools for making a life, not just a living. To learn what they are, go to katenorthrup.com/tools. See you on the next episode.
Woohoo! You just finished an episode of Plenty. Don't you feel richer already? So listen, if you're ready for even more, I teach a free money workshop only 2 times a year, and it is coming up April 23rd, 24th, 25th. It is called Wide Receiver. And in the 3-day workshop, I am going to help you restore your relationship with money and claim the bounty that has your name on it. You can go over to katenorthrup.com/wide to get your free ticket, and I'll see you there.